headlines, a sad day for the occupied West Bank. Two Palestinians, both in their 20s, are killed in two separate acts of Israeli violence. Israeli authorities giving the green light to thousands of new settler units in the occupied Palestinian territories. Plus scenes of chaos and violence in Kazakhstan. A fifth day of protests against the government turns deadly. Hello and welcome, everybody. It's been a violent day in the occupied territories where Israelis have killed two Palestinians. The Israeli military carried out a pre-dawn raid on a refugee camp near the city of Nablus in the West Bank. That prompted local residents to protest and led to clashes between the two sides. A 21-year-old Palestinian identified as Bakir Hashash was fatally shot in the head. Separately, an Israeli settler ran over a Palestinian man in a village near Ramallah and killed him. He was only 25. Hamas has reacted to the killings. A spokesman for the movement says the blood of these martyrs would only intensify the Palestinian intifada against Israel. According to Hazem Qasem, Palestinian youth will not give up their resistance until their land is freed from occupiers. Here's our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, with the latest about today's deadly violence. Take a listen.
Israeli forces raided the refugee camp of Balata, East Nablus, in order to conduct a arrest campaign, according to a statement by the Israeli military. However, according to the Israelis, there were clashes and Palestinians opened fire at the Israeli troops. Then there were clashes from the two parts. The Israelis shot and killed at the spot Bakir Hashash, 23-year-old from the Balata refugee camp. They say that none of the Israeli soldiers were wounded. The other Palestinian who was killed this morning was Mustafa Falani from the village of Safa near Ramallah. According to his relatives, he was going to his workplace in the lands occupied in 1948, and he was crossing the road. One Israeli settler ran over his vehicle, and of course, he left them and ran away. He escaped. Also, this morning, at least 20 Palestinians were detained by the Israeli forces across the occupied West Bank. Israelis claimed that they are wanted for security reasons.
Staying with news from Palestine, the Israeli regime has given the go-ahead for the construction of another 3,500 settler units in the occupied territories. According to Palestinian media, the new units will be built in the north of Bethlehem in the occupied West Bank. The project will connect two already existing settlements in that region, totally cutting off Palestinian neighborhoods in East Alawitz from Bethlehem. Palestinians say these illegal settlements are part of Israel's land grab policy that's seeking to force them from their homes. Palestinian prisoner Hisham Abu Hawash is suspending his hunger strike after 140 days following an agreement by Israel to release him. His hunger strike, which is one of the longest ever, brings to the fore the years-long challenges of many Palestinians that are held captive in Israeli jails for undisclosed allegations. Here's a report.
This man, Hisham Abu Hawash, has been refusing to eat for 141 days, but he's finally breaking his fast because the Israeli regime has agreed to release him next month. Abu Hawash has been receiving a great deal of support from the Palestinian people, who have rallied protesting his unjust detention and demanding his freedom. And now these people finally have a reason to celebrate. In Al-Khalil, Abu Hawash's home, his supporters have turned out to rejoice this victory against Israeli jailers. His family had especially a tough time in recent days after doctors warned that Abu Hawash's health was deteriorating, that he was slipping in and out of coma and facing the danger of sudden death. Now they can finally breathe a sigh of relief.
I thank all the Palestinians who stood with us. Thanks to everyone who helped my brother. I thank God they released him.
During the past 3 days, we lived through a psychological war that was carried out by the Israeli intelligence due to what was happening with my brother Hisham. There were strong maneuvers, but we overpassed those as a family. Today, Hisham achieved victory for all the Palestinians.
Now, Abu Hawash's lawyer says he would be hospitalized for medical follow-up before his designated release on February 26. Palestinian officials have weighed in, praising his resistance.
Hisham Abu Hawash prevails after 141 days of hunger strike. We hail Hisham for his forceful will, his family, Palestinian people and people around the world who raise their voices in solidarity, thanks to countries that press Israel to release him next month on February 26th.
Resistance movements have also poured praise on Abu Hawash, saying his victory should remind Palestinians how they can win every battle against Israel. The 40-year-old father of five children was arrested in October 2020 and started his hunger strike early 5 months ago to protest his detention without charge or trial that is allowed under Israel's administrative detention system. His lengthy hunger strike once again shed light on this illegal practice. Out of 7,000 Palestinians in Israeli jails, more than 500 are locked up without facing any charges or having a trial. For many of them, the last choice against this inhumane measure is to stop eating for lengthy periods of time. Still, the majority find themselves locked up in deplorable and non-standard conditions of the Israeli prisons, where they are sometimes even subjected to systematic torture and harassment.
Cities across Iran have held funeral processions for 250 martyrs of the war with Iraq that took place decades ago. The processions were held in 24 provinces. The Iran-Iraq war took place over 8 years. During the 1980s, former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein launched a military invasion of Iran with support from Western and regional states. Well above 200,000 Iranians are estimated to have either lost their lives or gone missing during the war. Over the years, the country has been carrying out search operations to recover the remains of those missing. The search mostly spans Iran's southern and western regions, which border Iraq, as well as areas inside Iraq. And people in the Indian-administered Kashmir have marked the martyrdom anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Various events were held during the week to pay homage to Soleimani and his companions. Said Ali Safi has more.
People in different parts of Indian-administered Kashmir have commemorated the second anniversary of Iran's top military commander and head of Iran's elite Quds Force, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani's martyrdom. The speakers at the event in the region's capital city, Srinagar, paid tributes to Soleimani and hailed him as a charismatic, brave and heroic figure who was loved not only by his countrymen, but all the oppressed people in the world. They said by assassinating General Soleimani in a drone attack, the US and its allies proved once again that they don't want peace in the world, particularly in the West Asia region.
Qasem Soleimani's popularity had transcended boundaries and he had successfully crushed Daesh in Iraq and Syria, which obviously didn't go down well with the US administration, which was secretly supporting the terror group. So they assassinated him to consolidate the group's presence in the region.
General Qasem Soleimani's legacy will continue to guide the oppressed and the seekers of justice. It will always live in our hearts. The valuable services and deeds of Qasem Soleimani's will always be remembered for the protection of the Islamic Revolution and the support of the oppressed in the region.
Shahid Haj Qasem Soleimani alayhi rahmah.
We shall never forget the sacrifice he rendered to save the world from the scourge of Daesh. The resistance forces under his dynamic leadership prevented the seizure of Iraq and foiled the nefarious designs of the axis of evil in Syria.
General Soleimani's anniversary in this part of the world has been marked as Martyrs Week. Despite inclement weather, people gathered to honor the martyrs, including Mohsen Hojaji, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, and Sheikh Bakr al-Nimr, among others. Stalls were installed on roadsides, and volunteers were offering tea and drinks to passers-by in remembrance of Soleimani and other martyrs.
Our martyrs are our pride. We, the volunteers of Khuddam-e Hussain, have done our bit to remember their supreme sacrifice.
Kashmir, the only Muslim-majority region of India, has seen massive protest rallies following the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and his companions 2 years ago.
People here believe General Qasem Soleimani was an iconic figure in this era who fought for all the oppressed people of the world regardless of their religion or sect. They say he was a real hero who will continue to inspire the generations to come. Said Ali Safi, Indian administered Kashmir.
We're receiving fresh updates about the situation in Kazakhstan, where a fifth day of deadly unrest triggered by soaring fuel prices is ongoing. Russian paratroopers and military forces from CSTO, an alliance of ex-Soviet states led by Moscow, have now been sent to help Kazakhstan deal with the turmoil. The deployment came just hours after President Kasym Tokayev made an appeal for help. Local media say a total of 12 police officers have been killed and 350 others injured in clashes with protesters. Also, security officials say dozens of people have been killed in battles with police in Almaty overnight as they tried to storm government buildings. The unrest has already triggered a national state of emergency and the resignation of the prime minister. Political commentator Tony Gossing says the unrest in Kazakhstan is apparently being orchestrated from abroad.
There's two competing narratives here, and I think I'll leave it to your listeners to decide which is the truest, really. One is that the outside powers very much want to get their hands on this incredibly resource-rich country. Well, oil is just one of the resources, gold and rare minerals. Now, we all know how much these new electric car-powered industries and solar industries are desperate for the sorts of minerals that are in Kazakhstan. So it could be that this is something which has been orchestrated from outside. Now, I would say, you might say, well, you know, that this is the sort of thing that is unlikely to be because it's a spontaneous thing from the people of Kazakhstan, and it may well be, particularly since the government has been upping all these energy prices. This, of course, is going to upset people, and it's one of the reasons that governments should not allow this sort of thing to happen, because what they're doing is they're providing an excuse for people to come out on the streets. But if you look at over the years about how revolutions have happened in countries, how governments have been overthrown and overturned, well, we can go back to Russia between 1917 and 1923, and China between 1946 and 49. These were very long, drawn-out, slow processes.
U.S. President Joe Biden is keeping a lot more migrants in detention than his predecessor, Donald Trump. An Instagram post by independent news program Democracy Now! Says U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is now holding more than 22,000 migrants in prisons. That's 7,000 more from the Trump administration. Rights activists are calling for the detention centers to be shut down, and the call has especially grown louder since COVID rates have started spiking and conditions inside jails have deteriorated. The advocates argue that there's no social distancing, which puts detainees at greater risk of infection. The U.S. Attorney General has vowed to hold accountable anyone involved in last year's attack on the Capitol building by supporters of former President Donald Trump. The stern warning by Merrick Garland comes a day before the first anniversary of the violence. The Justice Department, headed by Garland, has charged more than 720 people with various crimes, including assault on police to conspiracy. Of those people, about 165 have pleaded guilty, and at least 70 have been sentenced to various jail terms. A large mob of Trump's fans stormed the Capitol on January the 6th, 2021, in a failed bid to derail the former congressional certification of his 2020 election loss to President Joe Biden.
In late 2020, Americans went to the ballots to pick the country's next president. 4 days after votes closed, Joe Biden was declared the winner, but the incumbent leader, Donald Trump, alleged vote fraud, and in doing so, shattered Washington's self-proclaimed image of the cradle of democracy. Trump adamantly refused to concede defeat after losing the 2020 presidential vote. On January 6, 2021, he called on his supporters to march on the Capitol and, quote, "stop the steal." His fans attempted to do that. The world was shocked as news networks around the world showed thousands of Trump supporters forcing their way into the Capitol building, the symbol of U.S. democracy. Lawmakers engaged in the process of certifying the presidential election had to stop their task and flee for their lives. Some reports even suggest that a Republican senator was so frightened that he asked the Capitol security repeatedly to shoot the protesters. 5 people died in the chaos, one of them in the Congress building. To date, American authorities have arrested nearly 600 people and are looking for hundreds of more suspects. A big portion of the defendants stand accused of assaulting police officers. The FBI asked U.S. citizens to report each other out and tell the police if they knew anyone who had taken part in the riots. The incident inevitably had adverse consequences for the United States' image, both domestically and internationally. An opinion poll conducted last year by Harvard University showed that more than half of the country's young generation thought that American democracy is in trouble or failing. Moreover, an Axios survey indicated that now only 51% of the U.S. public thinks the next presidential election will be fair and free. Also, the Democracy Perception Index for 2021 showed that 44% of participants perceived the U.S. influence and meddling in the affairs of their countries as the biggest threat to democracy in their nations. At the same time, politicians and political analysts expressed shock and disgust at the chaotic scenes at the Congress grounds. Richard N. Haas, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, said the attack signaled a post-American era. The assault on the Capitol changed the face of Washington, D.C. as well. The Congress building was fenced off on multiple occasions after the riots. Furthermore, Joe Biden's inauguration was carried out under heavy military presence, with an unprecedented 25,000 troops ensuring security. That was bigger than the number of U.S. forces present in Iraq and Afghanistan on the same day. The police reaction to the Capitol riots also raised questions about the U.S. law enforcement's differential treatment of white protesters. Whereas black people could be killed and injured for much smaller crimes, police were in fact criticized for their late and subdued response to the deadly protests by Trump's supporters.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei, Lady Fatima was an ocean of wisdom and piety. July the 5th, 2007. Fatima al-Zahra, Salamullah alayha, is superior to all great and saintly women throughout history. What factors, forces, and what kind of inner strength could make a person become such an ocean of wisdom, piety, sanctity, and spiritual transcendence in such a short time? This is a miracle of Islam. The love of Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha, also known as Siddiqatul Kubra, is a great blessing for us. In her short life, Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha, achieved the position of the mistress of all women. In other words, she is superior to all great and saintly women throughout history. What factors, forces, and what kind of inner strength could make a person become such an ocean of wisdom, piety, sanctity, and spiritual transcendence in such a short time? Well, this is a miracle of Islam. Another point is the blessed descendants of this great person. the association of Surah Al-Kawthar with Fatimah al-Zahra, even if such an association had not existed in our hadith collections, is an accurate association. There are so many blessings that have been bestowed on the Holy Prophet's household and on each and every one of the Imams, alayhim as-salam.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The world is full of enjoyable individual, social, worldly and otherworldly melodies which came out of the pure throats of the Imams, alayhim as-salam, Husayn ibn Ali, Zainab al-Kubra, Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba, Imam Sadiq, Imam Sajjad, and each and every one of the Imams, alayhim as-salam, would produce these melodies. See what a great excitement exists in the world of spirituality and in the path of guidance because of the words of these great personalities and their lessons and teachings. They are the children of Fatimah al-Zahra, alayha salam. We should sincerely thank God. A number of the poems which are recited by the friends contained this point. The love of Fatimah al-Zahra, alayha salam, also known as Siddiqatul Kubra, is a great blessing for us. Thank God we became familiar with her. Thank God we relied on her kindness, and thank God we appreciated her value. Thank God we relied on her, asked her to help us gain an understanding of things, and expressed our love for her. These are great blessings. We should preserve these blessings. That was the leader's speech from July the 5th, 2007.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me. Through all my years I've been lost, you guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Iranians have paid tribute to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, two anti-terror icons who were assassinated in a U.S. drone strike at the Baghdad airport on January 3, 2020. People from all walks of life participated in ceremonies across Iran to mark the occasion. They called for bringing the perpetrators to justice. Addressing a gathering in the capital, Tehran, President Ibrahim Raisi said former U.S. President Donald Trump, who ordered the strike, must be put on trial.
The then U.S. President must be put on trial as an aggressor, murderer, and the main criminal. He must face divine retribution. If Trump, Pompeo, and other criminals are not tried in a fair court for their horrible crime and are not punished for their shameful acts, I tell all American statesmen, Do not doubt, Muslims will take revenge.
Similar ceremonies were held in other countries too. People in Iraq, Yemen, Palestine and Syria held vigils and paid tribute to the top generals.
So he's seen as someone who put the country first, who did whatever was necessary, whatever he was called to do for his country, he did. He was described by many as an unassuming man, he wasn't arrogant, and that led to his personal appeal. But he's seen as a great hero in Iran and the surrounding area, and his record in defending the country and in leading the troops in different areas, different times, and even in peacetime, being responsible for at least some of the military in Iran, has left the people with great memories of him and great respect for him.
In Lebanon, the Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement said the expulsion of all U.S. troops from the region will be the ultimate revenge for the assassination of Soleimani and Mohandas. Said Hassan Nasrallah hailed the two figures, saying they played a key role in defeating Daesh terrorists in the region. Iran's ambassador and permanent representative to the United Nations has urged the UN Security Council to hold the United States and the Israeli regime responsible for the assassination of Iran's anti-terror commander, General Qasem Soleimani.
Given the dire implications of this terrorist act on international peace and security, the Security Council must live up to its charter-based responsibilities and hold the United States and the Israeli regime to account for planning, supporting, and committing the terrorist act. As I have on numerous occasions underlined, this internationally wrongful criminal act was a grave breach of the obligations of the United States under international law, and thus entails its international responsibilities.
Tahravanchi stressed that General Soleimani played a significant role in combating international terrorism, calling his assassination a big gift and service to Daesh and other terrorist groups in the region. The Iranian diplomat noted that former head of the Israeli military intelligence, Major General Tamir Haiman, admitted last December that Tel Aviv was involved in the 2020 assassination and described it as one of the two significant and important targeted killings during his term.
The United States, unfortunately, has veto power in the Security Council and continually defends Israel from accountability for its many crimes against humanity and international war crimes and gross violations of human rights. So the fact that Israel was involved in the assassination of General Soleimani, which was ordered and carried out by the United States, is something the Security Council will never hold Israel responsible for.
The former official was apparently referring to Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, an Iranian nuclear scientist who was assassinated north of the capital Tehran in November 2020. Despite Iran's repeated calls on the international community to hold the perpetrators responsible for the dangerous adventurisms, neither the United Nations nor self-proclaimed promoters of human rights in the West have so far called for accountability or made any meaningful attempt to prevent similar attacks. Regardless, Iran has vowed to bring the perpetrators to justice and take revenge for the crimes they've committed.
Late Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, was seen as a hero who stood up for the suppressed Muslims and Christians and people of other religions in Syria and Iraq, as well as other parts of West Asia. According to many Syrians and Iraqis, he was fearless, courageous, unselfish, and always present on the battlefield. General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against the U.S.-sponsored Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in West Asia. He was the strategic master of many battles against Takfiri terrorists in Syria. He played an important role in the liberation of the Christian-dominated regions from the grip of Takfiri terrorists in the country. Also, he had a great reputation in Iraq, where Daesh conquered large parts of the country. He managed to unite Sunni Kurds and Shia fighters in the battles against Takfiri terrorists. Therefore, for many Iraqis, he was a hero, like in Syria. General Soleimani was able to mark very important plans in line with providing regional security by preventing Daesh terrorists from overthrowing governments in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, and other countries.
Daesh was actually an American and Zionist creation in order to destroy a number of Muslim countries, as well as give a horrible image to Islam, because Daesh terrorists indulged in horrific crimes against innocent people. And so that project that the imperialists and the Zionists had launched, we saw how they erupted in Iraq in July of 2014, and by 2017 they were wiped out through the efforts of martyr General Qasem Soleimani.
General Soleimani was assassinated in a U.S. drone strike on January 3, 2020, while on a trip to the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. This raises the question, why should Washington kill the man who fought the terrorists in West Asia most successfully? General Soleimani was a powerful, strategic mastermind who revealed the ugly face of Western interference in both Syria and Iraq. His assassination exposed the U.S.'s support for terrorist groups and Washington's lies of countering terrorism. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was loved by people of the region as a defender of the oppressed, protecting Christians, Muslims, and those of other religions. Western-sponsored terrorist groups such as Daesh and Jabhat al-Nusra sought to promote an image of Islam that was false. These groups were created by the Israeli regime and America with the financial support of Saudi Arabia. And General Soleimani was the one who confronted these deviant groups in Iraq and Syria. He managed to help the oppressed. He tried to save women, men, and children in Iraq and Syria from the crimes of Takfiri terrorists, no matter what faith they were from. He united Muslims and Christians and people of other religions in the fight against terrorists and once and for all defeated them.
Well, as Daesh's tactics included killing innocent people, kidnapping women and raping them, killing children, and so on, these are things that have absolutely nothing to do with Islam. In fact, they are the very antithesis of the values of Islam that places a great premium on saving and protecting human life. So while Daesh and their backers were busy in killing innocent people, and with the deliberate policy, of course, of the imperialists and the Zionists to create a very violent and negative image of Islam, the people, obviously, the targeted people, were horrified by their actions, whether it was in Iraq or in Syria.
Millions of people in Iran, Iraq, Syria, and the rest of the world attended the funeral of General Soleimani. This shows that he is beloved by the West Asian nations and all the free people of the world. Iran marked the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of the legendary anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. In a meeting with General Soleimani's family in Tehran, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said, "General Soleimani has turned into a role model and a hero for the younger generation." Meanwhile, tens of thousands have taken part in ceremonies to pay tribute to the highly charismatic commander.
Soleimani was commander who did not allow the terrorists to approach our borders. He defeated Daesh in Iraq and Syria, so the entire region always owes him a big thank.
American politicians thought that by killing General Soleimani, they would be able to let the terrorists win, but we are all going to preserve his legacy.
Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the enemies were under the delusion that with the martyrdom of General Soleimani, quote, they would be done with their job. However, the U.S. fled Afghanistan as a result of the sacrifices made by Soleimani.
Afghan youth learned many lessons from him. Today, all the freedom-seeking people in the world regard him as a role model.
All Afghan people should follow his path, and he is in our hearts. We all look at him as someone who defeated arrogant powers.
Ayatollah Khamenei also said Washington is inevitably pulling out of Iraq and only has an advisory role there, without any military presence. Iran's leader warned Iraqi officials to be vigilant about the issue. On Saturday, Iraqis held rallies on the streets of the capital, Baghdad, to honor top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, both assassinated by the U.S. 2 years ago. Demonstrators called for the withdrawal of American forces from the country. Ayatollah Khamenei added the resistance front in Yemen is making gains, while the enemy has been brought to its knees in Syria. The leader, on Saturday, touched on the participation of tens of millions of people in Iraq, Iran, and other countries in the funeral and the processions held for General Soleimani after his assassination. General Soleimani is hailed as a hero of the fight against terrorism by people across the globe. The Islamic movement in Nigeria described General Soleimani as a hero of coordination between Christian and Muslim religions, leading victory over Daesh in Iraq and Syria. Also, Bolivia ex-president Evo Morales described General Soleimani as a hero in the fight against imperialism. The top Iranian anti-terror commander's assassination also exposed the U.S.'s support for terrorist groups and Washington's lies of countering terrorism. Iran has called on the United Nations to adopt a resolution condemning those behind the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The Iranian President's office has made the call in a letter to the President of the UN General Assembly, saying the impunity granted to the perpetrators of the drone strike poses a threat to international peace and security. It stresses that attacks on government and diplomatic officials are crimes against humanity and violate the UN Charter and international law on human rights. It warns that inaction on state terrorism can lead to devastating consequences for the international community.
That type of extra-legal activity really was emphasized and came forward in a way that it had never seen before, basically to assassinate people in the middle of essentially a diplomatic mission in another country. And they're simply not possible to continue like that. And the response, of course, in Iraq was fury and the demand that the United States get out. So clearly, it's the wrong way to go from a whole variety of reasons, but especially a moral reason.
Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani, was assassinated along with his companions, including Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, in a U.S. terrorist drone strike near the Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. But the U.S. was not alone in committing this heinous crime. Israel provided Washington with the key intelligence support, including tracking General Soleimani's cell phone. General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis were two iconic figures in the fight against the Daesh terrorist group that emerged amid the mayhem resulting from the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. Both commanders were admired by Muslim nations for eliminating the U.S.-sponsored Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in the region, particularly in Iraq and Syria. Days after the brazen act, the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps launched a volley of missiles at two major military bases housing American forces in Iraq. Iran denounced the assassination as a state terrorism and vowed to end the American presence in the region as the ultimate act of revenge. The U.S. assassination drew a wave of condemnation from officials and movements through the world and triggered huge public protests across the region.
The grief-stricken woman is the mother of the 14-year-old girl who died in her arms after being shot by an LAPD officer.
I have a 1 unit come in from the sergeant on the second floor.
On December 23rd, police are dispatched to a department store after receiving reports about a violent man beating up customers there with a heavy bike lock. One officer, wielding a rifle, fires shots at the assailant.
Hold it! I got it!
It's on fire!
But one of the bullets pierces through the dressing room's wall and hits the teenager, who's hiding there with her mother, in the chest. Valentina's body immediately goes limp. She is dead.
Right? I mean, shooting into a Burlington factory, basically a store, a clothing store, is insanity. Is insanity to do so with people while people are shopping there, and yet you have officers who are doing that because they aren't thinking rationally anymore. Rational thought has gone out of the minds of many of these individuals, and it has become solely almost like a cult, like a state-sanctioned army, if you will, who is locked in arms and feels like they are being attacked from every side. And so in order to defend themselves from these attacks, they are just getting more and more violent and aggressive.
She was the fifth person killed by the LAPD forces in a 9-day period. The sixth victim survived their injuries. None of them were armed with any firearms. The incident during Christmas time sparked outrage and criticism at one of the United States' largest police departments. The Los Angeles Police Department killed more than double the number of civilians in 2021 than it did in 2020. Activists believe the rise in the number of fatalities is because the officers rarely face consequences for their actions, if at all.
I cannot breathe. He's a tough guy.
The death of African-American George Floyd at the hands of a white Minneapolis officer in May 2020 sent shockwaves across the United States and prompted protests against police racism and brutality. Against that backdrop, however, the number of police killings remains high. In 2021, American police killed over 1,100 people. In the 2021 calendar, there were only 12 dates on which the police didn't kill anyone. 27% of the victims over the past year have been African American. This is while the minority group constitutes only 13% of the U.S. population.
Really, what the police are trying to show here through these killings, and through the, it's not just through the killings, but through the market increase in the number of killings from last year to this year, is that they are the ones with the power in these cities, that they are the ones with the right or the privileges to exercise their violence. They are the ones who can shoot first and then ask questions later. They're allowed to do that.
In the meantime, while more murder and manslaughter charges have been made against police officers, criminal charges and convictions have remained exceptionally rare. 98.3% of killings by police between 2013 and 2020 have not resulted in officers being charged with a crime.
So, on the one hand, even though you're seeing some of the officers get away with the violent acts that they're committing, and other ones get arrested and get sent to prison for their crimes that they committed. Either way, the other officers who are watching all this happen, who are watching the attacks from the mainstream media, who are watching the attacks from the population, from the civilians, and who are watching that now their fellow brethren be locked up for crimes that they've either witnessed or committed themselves, this is causing a sort of defensiveness on the part of police here in the United States, where they're uniting over their brotherhood in terms of being police officers before even uniting over their nationality, before even what it means to be an American, before what it even means to be a human being.
The families who've lost a member to police violence in the U.S. are demanding justice and accountability. Even if justice is served, they will have to live with the sobering thought that their loved ones won't ever come back.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
When he moved to America, no Shia scholar had ever been there. And till now, Michigan, specifically Dearborn, is considered as the heart of Shia in the U.S.
The result of cooperation is the building of the greatest mosque in the United States at the time that was funded by a Sunni government, that was Jamal Abdel Nasser, and was constructed by a Shia scholar, that was Sheikh Muhammad Jawad Shiri. And this is really notable.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
What will we say in front of it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is The Teacher. You are listening to Imatan, the host of this program. The Teacher is about the life and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite scholars, philosophers, and jurists all across the nation of Islam. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyani. Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, brother. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziyani, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So today we want to talk about an outstanding Shiite figure who spent most of his life in the country, U.S., with establishing an Islamic center over there and was busy with preaching the Shia Jafari Islam in Michigan, Dearborn, especially the city of Dearborn in Michigan. He is no one but Muhammad Jawad Sharif. Sheikh Ziyani, let's start with you, brother. Give us some details about the early life of Muhammad Jawad Sharif, also known as Imam Muhammad Jawad Sharif, because he was leading the prayers and the, you know, the salats over there in the mosque.
Yes. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Late Sheikh Muhammad Jawad Shiri was born in 1905 in the city of Tyre, that in Arabic it is named Sur, in the country of Lebanon.
Yes.
And he aged for 82 years and passed in 1994 in United States of America. He was a scholar that dedicated his life in learning and studying Islamic studies and then trying to teach and preach Islamic studies all around the world. So after having his teenage years in Lebanon, he moved to Najaf and started his Islamic studies in the courses of great scholars like Marhum late Sayyid Abu al-Hassan Isfahani rahmatullah alayh, late Mirza Naini, and late Awdiyuddin Iraqi rahmatullah alayhim ajma'in. May God bless all these souls. And then he moved back to Lebanon, and there he had some works with late Sayyid Abdul Hussein Sharafuddin. Allama Sayyid Abdul Hussein Sharafuddin in Lebanon.
Al-Amali, the compiler of Al-Muraja'at.
Yes.
The famous book.
He was there and trying to have, Islamic studies and programs and giving, lectures for people and have his researches that there was a turning point in his life. Even we may say that it was a turning point in Muslim history, in Western culture, that was an invitation received from United States of America, the Muslim communities living there, that the majority of them were Lebanese at that time.
Yes.
They asked him to move to United States of America in Detroit to have tabligh and propagation and to be a resident scholar there to preach Islamic concepts for them.
Okay.
So he moved to United States and lived there, and he did very, very important and, you know, big missions that we will talk, inshallah, about.
Inshallah. That's right. Okay, thank you, Sheikh Ziani. Sheikh Mahdavi, let's talk a little bit about his life in the U.S. You know, it is believed that Muhammad Javad Sherry was the first Shiite imam or sheikh who moves to the U.S. and tries to preach the Ja'fari Islam over there in the mosques, over there for the Muslims, so become the source of the benefits for those who want to be familiar with the Shiite Ja'fari school of thought. Explain a little bit more for us about this aspect of his life.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is a very important thing that I believe we have to talk about this more. Why? Because Sheikh Muhammad Jawad Sherry is considered as one of those who actually opened the path and the way for all preachers, specifically Shia preachers, if they want to know how start and establish a foundation and start preaching Shia Islam or Islam generally. I think he is a kind of example and role model for them.
Yes.
As you said, when he moved to America, no Shia scholar had ever been there by his time.
Yes.
So he was invited to the state of Michigan by a Muslim community to be among them. And just as a nutshell, if we wanted to look at the fruit of his striving and efforts that he put forth, we can look at the Muslim community in Michigan. And till now, Michigan, specifically Dearborn, is considered as the heart of Shia in the U.S.
That's right.
So in the whole U.S., in this big continent, someone migrated to one state and established this foundation, and till now the whole state is considered as the heart of Shia in the whole U.S. So it shows that it was a really outstanding and distinguished job that he did. But
really a great achievement for the Muslims.
Yes,
and
definitely.
Okay.
If we wanted to analyze what made him to achieve such success and big goals that he had in his mind, we can read his history and the type of his look upon the Islam and Muslim community, the way he was thinking of the similarities and making union among all Muslim, no matter if they are coming from Muslim community or Shia community or Sunni community.
Yes.
And this is very surprising for us to know that even to do a kind of fundraising to get a good amount of money to buy the land and start building the mosque, he went to Jamal Abdel Nasser, who is the president of Egypt.
Yes.
In Egypt, we have Al-Azhar University.
Yes.
That everybody, if he wants to talk about the heart of Sunnis, specifically back then, Al-Azhar is one of those things that will come up in his mind.
The main academic center of this kind of life.
And
that's right.
The way that they would look upon Shia at that time. So he put all these things aside. He was really brave to dare to go to the heart of Sunnism.
Yes.
And talk to the president of Sunnis.
Yes.
I mean, the country known as majority Sunni inhabitants. So it shows that how he was open-minded.
Yes.
And this is also recorded in history that he had a very good discussions with Sheikh Shaltut, the head of the University of Al-Azhar back then, that time. And he was also considered, I mean Sheikh Muhammad Jawad Sherry, he was also considered as one of those who inspired this spirit of unionship among Sunni and Shia.
That's right. And the good news is that on that time, Sheikh Mohammed Shaltut and the others at Al-Azhar accept the suggestions of Imam or Sheikh Mohammed Javad Chery on the establishing special courses on Ja'fariya School of Thought in Al-Azhar University. And this is really a nice achievement, as you said, in the heart of Sunnism. And how much our Sunni brethren on that time, especially Sheikh Mohammed Shaltut, welcomed this suggestion. It's really nice and kind from them. The unity that existed over there, the special courses that were established over there in order to teach the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. So do you have any comment on this part, Sheikh Ziania?
Yes, if we want to look at the issue deeper, we need to analyze the Muslim situation at the time of late marhum Sheikh Mohammed Javad Chery.
That's right.
That on those times, there were some Islamic movements all around the world to, wake Muslims up and to stand against oppression and to, have their own independence from Western culture. And we should know that at that time there was no sign of Islamic Republic of Iran, and many Muslim countries, they were not having Muslim, governments even. There were secular governments at that time ruling the countries. And the head of Muslim countries at that time was Egypt, and Jamal Abdel Nasser was the leader of the country at that time. But we should know that the Marja, the most prominent mujtahid at the time was, amongst Shia scholars, was late Ayatollah Burujerdi, rahmatullah alayhi. And because Ayatollah Burujerdi has this mindset that Shia and Muslim are brethren, and he even gave this idea to Sunnis in Mecca even to not to say prayer separately four times, but to gather and have collectively jama'ah prayer. So because of this mindset that late Ayatollah Burujerdi had, he had some discussions with Al-Azhar and with Sheikh Shaltut, the leader of Al-Azhar and chairman of Al-Azhar. And these discussions were paving the path for the discussions that Sheikh Mohammed Javad Chery had with Al-Azhar.
That's right.
Because of the introduction and the, discussions, preliminary discussions that late Ayatollah Burujerdi had, then path was paved and the situation was ready to have more, dialogue and even have some, cooperations.
Yes.
That the result of this cooperation is the building of the greatest mosque in the United States at the time.
Yes.
That was funded by a Sunni government, a Sunni president, that was Jamal Abdel Nasser, and was constructed by a Shia scholar.
Yes.
That was Sheikh Mohammed Javad Chery. And this is really notable. This and is really how, a role model for us.
And see how much respect they had for each other.
Yes.
The great Marja and the great, Sheikh of Al-Azhar University. And, again, as you said, because we named Allama Sharafuddin Al-Ameli in the book Al-Muraja'at, you see the dialogues that he had with Sheikh Al-Azhar, on that time, how much respect are in the letters sent and received between each other, talking about the rights of the Ahlul Bayt and the schools of thought and the Ja'fariya school of thought, really made him